Now, we were talking about this at the tail end of yesterday's programme, and we're starting with it today because there's so much actual fallout from it with the decisions that we indeed informed you of yesterday from the courts in relation indeed to the incinerator at Mollusc. And indeed, civil servants' views have been overturned in the courts, and there are no politicians to sign anything off here. Is Northern Ireland actually grinding to a halt? Yesterday, a High Court judge decided that the approval of a new £240 million ARC 21 waste incinerator on the outskirts of North Belfast was unlawful, and because a minister was not in post. Now, some were obviously pleased with the decision, including the man I'm about to speak to, who's been campaigning under the banner of No ARC 21, and his name is Charlie Thompson. Charlie, good morning.
Hello, Frank. Good morning to you.
Yes, you're one of the people who'd be happy today. There are other people who aren't so happy, apart from ARC 21, people generally who are thinking, is this country grinding to a halt? You know, it's an obvious reminder that our politicians are not doing their job. But this is to your benefit, Charlie. You must have been very pleased yesterday.
We were absolutely thrilled with the decision yesterday, Frank. This is something that we've been working on now as a community campaign for over 5 years. The outcome is that the decision taken now by the Permanent Secretary is actually totally unlawful. From our perspective, it basically vindicates the work that we've been doing. This is a facility that would have cost the taxpayer just under £250 million. It's a facility that simply was not required. There will already be overcapacity in the sector. There was no business case behind this proposal at all. And so from our perspective, the High Court has certainly taken the right decision, both from like a taxpayer perspective and from a local community perspective. This is over 4,000 people, Frank. I actually went to the trouble of submitting objections to this. And the time and effort that we have put behind this campaign, we've had cross-party support from all political parties. So the outcome of the High Court decision yesterday was certainly very, very welcome from our perspective.
If we had a direct rule minister in the near future, could he or she change all this?
I think that's more of a decision, Frank, for the civil servants to answer. From our perspective, what we would hope now from the High Court is that the outcome of this case is that this application is simply quashed. And therefore, that would mean that the applicants for this project would be back to the drawing board. But irrespective of that, right from the start, what we're saying is there have been arguments put forward that this has been shot down on a legal technicality. I can assure you there was an independent piece of work which is in the public domain now from a company called Eunomia. It's been in the public domain now since April this year, which completely undermines the business need for this facility. It is simply not required. It would be like a waste of taxpayers' money, as I've already stated, to the value of £250 million. You know, you think of the finance gaps in the health sector and the education sector. That £250 million could make massive inroads to addressing the issues and facing those services. From our perspective, there is no business need for this facility. Even if there is like a minister in post, we would be arguing strongly. We have the evidence now to back it up. There is no need for this facility. So why spend £250 million of taxpayers' money when it's simply not required?
But that wasn't what got you what you were looking for yesterday. It was the absence of a minister that allowed you to win the game.
At this stage, yes. But, you know, if you bear in mind, Frank, that whenever this application was first considered by a minister, it was like Mark H. Durkin at the time. He rejected the application. So actually, when we had a minister in post, the application was rejected at that stage. The applicants then for the project then took it to the Planning Appeals Commission. The Planning Appeals Commission then overturned that decision. But at no stage did the Planning Appeals Commission consider the outline business case, consider whether this facility would be needed and required. We now have the independent evidence to back up that it is not required, that it will be a complete waste of money. So from our perspective in answering that question, we would hope that if we had a second local minister in place now, that he or she would take the same decision and basically shut this facility down on the basis of a lack of need, a waste of taxpayers' money. On top of the issue now that the High Court and the original planning minister at the time also shot this proposal down. So it's not just a technicality, that's a smokescreen been put forward by the project developers. From our perspective, the case simply does not stack up.
Waste, however, has to be dealt with, and ARC21 clearly believe that following a template set in other places, they are on the right road with this, and that inevitably it will come to pass sometime in the future.
Absolutely don't agree with that again, Frank. From our perspective, and I just need to put this on record now, the independent report that is out now by a company called Eunomia, who are a well-respected regional authority on this type of facility, they have undertaken, as I say, April this year, they have undertaken an independent study, and the results of that are saying that there's already excess capacity in the sector in Northern Ireland. There is a full circle development gasification plant, which is just coming on steam now, over the coming weeks, on the Shorts Bombardier site in East Belfast. But this report makes it very, very clear there is no requirement for this facility. In fact, if the facility was to go ahead, our proposal has been arguing that this is RHI2, because actually what it's going to do, Frank, is there is going to be excess capacity within the ARC21 proposal that will then be sold to the private sector. So actually what we'll be doing is the taxpayers will be paying for 30 years for incinerating commercial waste. So it's RHI2 in disguise. So there is no requirement for the facility. Let's make that clear. Our campaign has been saying that now for 5-6 years. The independent research has backed it up. And in fact, by the ARC21 proposal going ahead, it will actually cost jobs as well in the sector, because the existing infrastructure would be badly affected by that. So the business case doesn't stack up. The High Court decision has also gone in our favour. And I haven't even touched upon the aspect, Frank, that our entire case right from the start has been arguing this project isn't required on multiple grounds. The impacts on health, ARC21 have never, ever, ever said that this facility is safe. What they said is it's within existing guidance levels, which is very, very different. The local community in that area will be massively affected. There will be impacts in health, there will be impact noise pollution, there will be over 600 HGV lorries a day travelling past front doors. This is in a totally residential area, an expanding residential area, and the supporting infrastructure on this proposal simply isn't there. They also claim that it will put electricity back into the grid. They don't even have a grid connection. So, you know, this project should have been stopped 5 years ago. There is no business case behind it. There are significant health implications. And purely from the business case and value for money perspective, it will be a waste of taxpayers' money.
Colin, no matter how robust your argument is and exceptionally articulate it is, you still manage to celebrate today, whether you like it or not, on a technicality from a judge. This could all change, and ARC21 will very clearly put their argument again. They're disappointed with yesterday's ruling. They're taking time to consider the judgment in detail. They're consulting with their stakeholders, but they will come back with an equally articulate and robust argument that plan for Hightown Quarry is the best thing for Northern Ireland.
I look forward to them bringing back that proposal, Frank, and I don't agree that it will be a detailed, articulate proposal that they come back with. If the business case doesn't exist for such a facility, how can they come back with any proposal? We have cross-party support. ARC21 is made up of 6 local councils, and that is made up all of local politicians. Our campaign has cross-party unanimous support right from the start. So, therefore, the key stakeholder groups that ARC21 will be consulting with will be the political parties. If the political parties are presented with a business case proposal which is flawed, if they can see the independent research that is now publicly available from Eunomia, then how can any reasonable thinking person take a decision to say that this facility is required? Plus, the tonnage levels and the actual requirement for this facility has been based on fundamentally flawed figures. The independent report now out in April this year, which I've already referred to, completely undermines and challenges that argument.
Okay.
So the actual basis for the facility being required is gone. Value for money doesn't stack up. Cross-party opposition to it. The impact on local community. All those arguments. So I certainly look forward to ARC21, and we certainly hope that the Department of Infrastructure don't waste further taxpayers' money trying to bring back an appeal on this, because that's what it would be, a complete waste of taxpayers' money again.
Okay, Charlie Thompson from No Arc 21, the robust argument, and definitely head across the winning line at the moment. But will there be another race? That is the all-important question. And what does it say about Northern Ireland? Because that is a major decision. This has been ongoing for years. And whether, you know, Charlie accepts it or not, on the technicality of a minister not being in place, the judge turned it down. So who's running the country? Is the country being run at all? And what sort of knock-on effect is it going to have on other hugely important decisions that are coming down the line? Decisions maybe that we've been waiting on for a significant time. We'll be talking about that here to analysts in just a moment. So what is the state of play for the running of this part of the world? Let me speak to two commentators who have their eye on it regularly. Let me speak, first of all, to Sam McBride from the newsletter. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
It reflects very negatively on where we are when such an important decision is in the headlines and one of the main issues is the absence of a minister.
Yes, and really, this is something which I think just adds to the layers of real confusion as to how Northern Ireland is governed. We've got a situation where neither the civil service, nor the politicians, nor us in the media, nor really anybody in the entire system has any sense of who can take which decisions. The court has very clearly said that in this case, Peter May, the senior civil servant, could not take this decision, but it has not been explicit as to what he could do. So sometimes a judge in a case will hand down almost a set of rules, a guideline for somebody in a very difficult situation where they're trying to assess whether they're complying with the law, where they can actually say maybe in a situation like this that the case is over a certain value or it is something which involves people outside the current Stormont Department or something of that nature. But here really the judge has said that this situation was unacceptable. She says that this was an unlawful act, but she has not said the extent of the powers of the civil service. So obviously there are very significant powers which civil servants would normally have. Those have been supplemented, pardon me, since the end of devolved government here with other powers. So we've had things like David Stirling really standing in for the First and Deputy First Minister, flying to America on their behalf, taking charge of the storm response last year. But really no clear guidelines here as to what civil servants can do and what they cannot do. So really, if you're in the civil service and you're looking at this, I think you could be forgiven for being very confused and very apprehensive about putting your neck on the line about any significant or controversial decision that comes across your desk.
Malachy O'Doherty is with me as well, a commentator on many issues. Malachy, if we're in a position where the civil servants don't know legally what they can do and what they can't do, and we don't have a minister, it does reflect incredibly negatively, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, essentially, I think civil servants are going to play it safe for themselves. I mean, they don't want to get into career trouble. They don't want to run up budget expenditure that they might be legally answerable for. So we've seen this in other areas of life. We saw it, for instance, when guidelines on abortion were withdrawn, that the whole medical establishment basically clamped up and went very, very, you know, towards protecting itself and safeguarding itself. We are a region without a government. We are a region that has no ministers who make decisions. We've banjaxed the civil services, freedom of movement, and we don't have we have one Secretary of State who appears to be completely ineffectual. I mean, she came in here, what was it, in January, and she was all for setting deadlines for talks and being very decisive. And like Brokenshire before us had warned us several times that there was a moment that would come when the present situation would become totally untenable. It's even more untenable now, and still nothing's being done. I mean, it's farcical. It suggests one thing, possibly, if there's any optimism in it, and that is that we don't actually need a government. You know, I mean, Germany ran for a few months without a government last year. You know, maybe, you know, what it does is utterly discredit the executive as anything we really actually need, and therefore will not fuss about it. That seems a bit farcical. That's maybe me being a wee bit satirical. On the other side, it says that basically Bradley has to get the finger out and go back to Theresa May and say, look, I know you're busy. I know you've got Brexit in your mind. I know you've got all sorts of complications. I know your cabinet's being torn apart by arguments. And I know you want Northern Ireland to sort its own problems out, but it can't do that. So you have to give me other ministers. We have to go for direct rule. Otherwise, you know, otherwise the place just becomes a tip.
Sam, you are the political editor of the newsletter. Is Malachy overstating this?
No, I don't think he is. I mean, we've got a situation where the two big parties in Northern Ireland, the DUP and Sinn Féin, have chosen not to go into government. That is their right. Nobody can force them to govern in the same way that if after the general election, Theresa May had actually said, I don't want to form a coalition with the DUP or form any sort of partnership with them. I'm going to hand power really to the opposition to try to form a government. That is how the system works. So if the DUP and Sinn Féin have chosen not to work the system, our system means that nobody else can work it. Therefore, it really puts the ball back into the court of the government. As Malachy says, what the government has really done over the last year is talk very tough about what that means, but really do nothing of substance. And the longer that has gone on, it has become less, and their rhetoric has become less and less meaningful. It's not believed by the parties. It's not believed by us. It's not believed by the public. There is an air of farce to this where things are being said which we know are not going to be followed through upon, and really everybody is participating in a sham, a play almost, and something which doesn't seem quite real at points.
Malachy, Brendan Hughes, writing in the Irish News this morning on the front page, says the Casement Park project has been dealt a further blow after a court ruling indicating that civil servants cannot take major planning decisions in the absence of a minister. A judge said yesterday that a senior official had no legal power to approve that £240 million waste incinerator after the collapse of devolution. Of course, people are waiting on this decision in relation to the massive project that is Windsor Park. Is that another very obvious example of where we'll be stuck in the mud?
Well, it's also an example of where maybe some people in the Irish Gaelic Catholic community will go to Sinn Féin and say, hey, hang on a minute, you know, this has gone on too long. You are the ones who pulled out of this. You are the ones who insisted, for instance, that it was Irish Gaelic culture that had to be respected. And your strategy is now leaving us without an Irish Language Act, which we would get in time if you went back in, but also without the possibility of having this massive Gaelic ground right in the middle of Andersonstown, where we could be staging Ulster finals, where we could have a massive transformation of Gaelic culture in West Belfast. So, that's another possibility. In the real world of politics, people express their sectional interests to the politicians, and that pressure works on politicians to get them to do things. So I would see that as one possible outcome, you know, that certainly people within the GAA might go back to Sinn Féin and say, look, this is now hurting us. And the whole point of your protest over the Irish Language Act is that you're protecting and defending Gaelic culture.
And finally, Sam, do you see examples that aren't so obvious of hold-ups in the future? We can't go on like this for very much longer, can we?
Well, we can and we can't, I suppose. I think the civil service, it would seem from yesterday's judgment, will be allowed to limp on and make day-to-day decisions. So the lights will stay on in the short term. And for that reason, most people will not notice this in the way that very few of us have in any practical way noticed the lack of a Stormont executive in our lives on a day-to-day basis. But what we will see are big strategic decisions not being taken. So road schemes, school closures, hospital reorganisation, and even things that might seem as trivial as the whole issue of taxis in bus lanes and cyclists and all manner of things which really come into the domain of political decisions. These are policy decisions. They're controversial. They're not the area that civil servants want to be in. They're not the area that civil servants ought to be in. But they were starting to push themselves into these areas and saying that the wider public interest meant that they ought to be stepping into the breach and really just doing something, taking some decision rather than really just leaving it in the complete abeyance for the vague possibility that maybe we'll get a minister at some point. But I think that is now very unlikely. So what we're likely to see is really a piling up of very important and very significant decisions, which we won't notice on a day-to-day basis. But in 5 years' time, we'll really feel the impact of some of these decisions which are not being taken.
You mentioned the taxis and the bus lanes. That was introduced without a minister. Could that be overturned? There's the investing and teaching workforce, which had been trialled with a minister and has now been reintroduced without a minister. Could that be overturned?
I think what is very likely in those cases is a challenge to those decisions. I don't think we'll see the civil service voluntarily rolling back on those decisions without a court saying to them that they have to do so, because yesterday's court verdict, I think, gives them enough wriggle room to not step in and say everything you've decided within these parameters is unlawful. It's just saying the incinerator is unlawful. But the implications of that case are that in at least some of those cases, it will be the case. So one big issue here was the involvement of the former minister, Mark H. Durkin, and then Chris Hazard, the ministers who had been involved in the planning for the incinerator. They had been very involved in the process, and that was something which the judge took cognizance of. She said this was a situation where the minister clearly was involved. It was a matter for him. Then it switched to the civil service. Why was that? That's not acceptable. If there's a situation where the minister wasn't involved, and therefore, I suppose, either something which wasn't terribly controversial or something which was much lower in quantum in terms of the scale of what was being proposed, maybe that won't come under this area. So there's certainly a big air of confusion around this. But anything which is controversial, and certainly the issue of the bus lanes was very controversial and was very keenly contested in a political forum, even when the civil servants were taking that decision. I think those are very likely to come before the courts. And what one huge decision which is already in the pipeline really for the courts, the North-South Interconnector, a big electricity project which is meant to further integrate the North and South electricity markets. That's something which we've been told is very important to keeping the lights on in Northern Ireland in years to come. I think it's very difficult to see how that survives in the context of this, because it bears lots of the characteristics of this case, not least that it was a major strategic planning decision taken by the same man in the same department in roughly the same time period.
Yeah, it's an excellent example. Just finally, Sam, do you think there'll ever be an incinerator at Hightown Quarry?
I honestly have no idea. I mean, it has dragged on this for so long, and one of the arguments, I mean, the important thing to say here is that the court didn't really at all get into the arguments as to whether it's a good or a bad thing to have the incinerator. This was very much a procedural debate. It was about whether the senior civil servant had the authority, whether he had the power to make this decision. The court found that he didn't have the power, and therefore it never really looked at all at this issue. The Planning Appeals Commission did look at this issue. It said that on balance, the incinerator should be built, that it looked at some of the wider issues around it. But one of the big arguments from the campaigners who took this successful court challenge has been that really, as time has moved on, there has been less and less of a need for this because there are other facilities coming in. There is a reduction in terms of the total waste that is being produced in Northern Ireland because of increased recycling, less packaging, things like that. That is likely to continue, and they argue that we're in danger of almost an RHI type situation where we're locked into this enormous contract for decades to come, and really if we don't have enough waste to feed this thing, that there's really a danger that taxpayers or ratepayers end up paying. So I mean, whether it ever gets built is really impossible to say, but I think what we can say is that the longer this goes on, the more the landscape has changed from the point at which this project was initially envisaged, and that certainly at the very least adds, I think, a layer of uncertainty as to whether it ever gets built.
Okay, the No Arc 21 group will be happy to hear your analysis. And finally, Malachy, do you think Hightown Quarry will ever be the home for an incinerator?
I don't know. I mean, it's not my particular anxiety. I think there are the bigger concerns for me. I think Sam is right about the North-South Interconnector. I mean, that is where the lights might go out. And the other thing is the Ben Gore report on the whole reform of the health service here. I mean, we have a crisis in the health service. We have, just on the example of hip replacements, I think I gave it before, we can manage 1,200 hip replacements a year. We have 3,000 on a waiting list with people waiting years in arthritic agony for a treatment that they're fully entitled to. Now, how far does this place go down the tubes before Theresa May intervenes and gives us back proper government? That's the question.
Okay, that's the question we leave it on. How far down the tubes are we going to go? Is there any further to go? You can let us know what you think. 02890 333 105. And Sam McBride, political editor of the newsletter, and Malachy O'Doherty, political commentator. Thank you.